Welcome to Parents Perspective. Five-year-old Danny's mom was in a quandary. Her pediatrician's group practice was splitting up, and she needed to choose which doctor would continue to treat her children. Meanwhile, Danny, in for his checkup, scrutinized the doctor's certificates on the office wall. "Tell me what these mean," he demanded. "I need to know about you if I'm going to let you be my doctor." From a parent's perspective, how can we best choose a pediatrician for our child? I'm Sandy Burt.
And I'm Linda Perlis. Our guests today deal with pediatricians on an ongoing basis. Pat Papa is a pediatric nurse practitioner and is an assistant professor of nursing in the pediatric nurse practitioner program at the Catholic University of America. She has a 25-year-old daughter and a 21-year-old son. We're glad to have you with us, Pat.
Thanks. It's wonderful being here.
Marion McCartney has been a certified nurse midwife in a group-owned practice for 22 years, working with both hospital and birth center deliveries. She has four children, ages 20 to 30. Welcome, Marion.
Thank you very much.
Marion, how early should expectant parents start searching for a pediatrician?
Well, they should start as soon as they know they're pregnant, because it takes them a long time to figure out what they're looking for, first of all, especially if it's the first baby. They really have a lot of soul-searching to do themselves to figure out what kind of a person they want to look after their children. So we encourage them to do that in our practice so that by the time they're about a month before their due date, they have someone all chosen that they've gone to speak to, and that person already knows them.
Pat, how can you check out your doctor's credentials? For example, what qualifications would you say are important to parents?
You know, I think there's a lot of information in mothers' booklets that they get in the mail and in ladies' journals about how to check out qualifications. And they often talk about, you know, find out about your doctor's education, you know, where to go to school. And I think that's important, but only if you know about medical schools or residencies, to ask about what medical school you went to and they told you Robert Wood Johnson Medical School. If you've never heard of that, you know, what does that mean to you? You know, it wouldn't mean much. And again, with residency training programs, if you're not well-versed in the medical training system in the United States, I don't know whether that's going to help very much. I asked a friend, actually, what parents usually ask him when they interview him, and he said that lately a lot of parents, mothers, have been coming in and saying, "So where did you go to high school?" Yeah, and it just shows that don't take what you read really seriously. The one thing I think you should look for is board certification. I think it's very important for pediatricians to be board certified in their specialty area, and that can give the mother and the father some sense that this person has gone through all the credentialing processes needed to provide good care, quality care to their child.
Is board certification by state or is it national?
It's a national exam that they take. Most pediatricians will take the exam a year after they finish their residency. Now, some physicians will state on their wall, or if you ask them, they say they're board eligible. And what that means is that they're eligible to take the exam. Actually, I want the pediatrician that's caring for my child to take that exam, to pass it, and I can have some confidence that they have met the criteria that's nationally rated for pediatricians.
So basically you're implying that if someone is board certified in, say, internal medicine, he could be practicing as a pediatrician.
I hope not.
Though he's not board certified in pediatrics. Is that legal? I thought you had to be board certified to practice medicine.
Actually, the laws governing the practice of medicine are fairly loose. Most physicians can do most anything. Yeah, they're very, where with nurses, we have fairly stringent laws on what age groups we can care for. If you're board certified in internal medicine, most physicians, I would assume, would be dealing with adults, because that's what internal medicine does. If you're board certified in family practice, that does say that you can care for age group from zero to death, basically, that they're certified to care for people without the lifespan. Board certification in pediatrics is what I look for when I look for a pediatrician to care for my children, because I felt that I wanted someone that truly had expertise, or at least training, you know, and had knowledgeable enough to pass the exam that they can take good care of infants through adolescence.
What about the gender of the pediatrician? Sometimes that's a little bit of an issue for parents.
I think that's a personal thing, and it's more how you relate, who you're comfortable relating to, and it's not only gender, it's also personality. Most female pediatricians, like most women, when their children are young, work part-time. So that means that they will be in a practice with someone else, and you have to make a decision, is that something you're comfortable with? not all, but a lot of female pediatricians do work part-time. Most male pediatricians work full-time, you know, as most men in the United States. Therefore, they're not, most male pediatricians, that at least the ones I know, work long, long hours. You know, they're up there early in the morning, you know, maybe visiting patients in the hospital. They're seeing patients all day. They work into the night. And is their experience with their children, you know, really important? I don't know. Yeah. So it's whether it's really, I think, up to the mother. Who does she feel comfortable talking to? Since I'm saying the mother, because most in this, in our culture, most mothers are the ones that go to the physician.
Mm-hmm. What about the significance of the pediatrician being a parent?
I don't think that parenthood necessarily endows people with the ability to communicate. And I think mm-hmm. that's a big issue in pediatrics, is that that person has to communicate with the parents. Because the parents are telling that person what is wrong with the children. And if you can't communicate with the parents, you've lost it. You have no ability to take care of that child well. So parenthood should help. It should help us, you know, to relate better, but not necessarily, and vice versa. I mean, there are some people out there who've never had children who are wonderful, wonderful pediatricians because they have that almost an innate ability to communicate well with people and put parents at ease.
I think I totally agree with that. Looking back on all the pediatricians that I know, you would think our gut feeling, I think, especially I'm speaking as a mom here, is that a parent would know what you're feeling or a parent has gone through what you've been through. And that's not always the best criteria to use. I've worked with pediatricians who were really biased because they were parents. They really felt their way of dealing with behavior problems, their way of dealing with developmental issues was the appropriate one. You know, and it's, you know, sometimes it certainly didn't even correspond with what was recommended. And they really felt that they had the right to dictate to this to their parents. For instance, I work with a pediatrician who was a wonderful guy, but he really felt that no child should be toilet trained prior to 4 to 5 years of age. Which, you know, those of us in pediatrics are always trying to prevent early toilet training, you know, before 18 months or 2 years. But he really was stretching the limit. And he was just adamant about this with his families, which, you know, I thought in this way, his basic feelings as a father, his concept of when is the right time to do things was interfering with his medical judgment there. Mm-hmm. So I would say that this is, again, a personal decision of the parents as they're looking for a pediatrician, but probably not the most important thing they want to look at.
Each of you has referred to interviewing pediatricians before mm-hmm. making a selection. Pat, how should parents prepare for an interview? And what kinds of things should they do and what kinds of things should they ask?
Actually, even before preparing for an interview, I think in this day and age when managed care is taking over most of this country, I think there's another issue we need to think about ahead of time. Most managed care companies will not pay for an interview. So you need to, one, if you are interested in doing that, call, find out if this group practice or this individual, one, will allow you to come for an interview, and two, do they charge for it? And I think if you find the pediatrician that says that they don't charge for it, that's a little star for that person. You know, I think that's good PR, and that if they do charge for it, then that might be reality, and that life's rough nowadays. You know, with managed care coming in, it's affected a lot of people's salaries. It's still not a black mark, but it's, you know, something that should be considered. And if they absolutely refuse to see you, I would think about that person or that group a little bit more. Questions to ask. I think it's important, one, write your questions down, mm-hmm. and it should be a lifelong habit that when you go into to see your pediatrician, and I should add in here, since I'm a pediatric nurse practitioner, I really like that type of practice, that we have a nurse practitioner and a pediatrician working together, so your healthcare provider, to write down your concerns ahead of time so you don't forget them. Write down what's important to you. What do you want to know from this practice? Some of the things that I'd want to know is what hospitals do they admit to, right? Do they care for their patients in the hospital? This is another new trend in healthcare, in that many practices are now, because of the stresses with the managed care system, they do not provide in-hospital care. The physicians and the nurse practitioners provide the primary care in the community, and then managed care will hire, actually, physicians that do in-hospital care. It's a new trend, a little different than what we used to in the United States, and maybe not a bad thing, because, again, you get really good at what you do all the time. And if you work provide hospital acute type of care all the time, that maybe this is a better way of doing it. I don't know. It's fairly new, but this is something to ask. You want to find out about sick care. When your child, and I think this is an important question to ask, if your child is sick and you call first thing in the morning, will you always get a same-day appointment? And to me, this was a standard of pediatric practice. And I have to tell you, two mothers I saw last week told me that they called their primary care provider. They were assigned to this person by the managed care organization. One child had a fever and was up crying with an earache all night. To me, this is something you need to see that child that day. She was given an appointment a week and a half later.
Whoa.
Well, that's ridiculous. Yes, now, I'm going to say mainstream medicine probably doesn't do that. But I think this question should be asked. How soon will my child be seen? And I think most practices say within, you know, the next working day, but I want to find that one out.
And weekend coverage is another good question. What happens if this is a small practice, one or two people together? What do they do for holidays? Who do they get for weekends when they aren't available, so that people know what to expect? And some pediatric practices have things like call-in hours, which is very nice for parents, because I think mothers are often hesitant to call in. Some people are very hesitant to bother people. And if they know that that's the time that you can call in and talk to the pediatrician, that's very helpful.
I remember when my children were very small, we lived in a New England town, and our pediatrician had call-in hours, and he said, "You're calling me at my breakfast table when you call during that hour." So I used to have this picture in my mind. I would dial the doctor, and I would know that just a few miles down the street, he's picking up the phone in his kitchen.
Right.
You know, and it really was extremely helpful to be able to reach him like that.
Yep.
I guess the other thing is, when you call and there's an answering service, mm-hmm. I always ask the answering service, now, is the doctor on call calling in every so often for his calls, or do you then immediately call the doctor?
Mm-hmm.
And that sometimes makes a significant difference in when they get to call back.
And I think that's a very legitimate question, because it's one thing to say, my child doesn't feel well, is throwing up, but it isn't an acute problem. And it's quite another thing if you think your child has appendicitis and is having pain. And so when you talk to pediatricians, it's very important to say, what do I do in these situations? What do I do when it's really an emergency? How do I reach you? And, you know, what is the less urgent call, kind of? How is that handled?
Especially in this day and age, where a lot of practices are now using call services, where you'll call in and get an advice nurse who will go through some protocols and ask you some specific questions and offer you suggestions. If you feel that you really, really want to talk to your pediatrician, is this an option for you? And this should be something that I think should be an option for you. I love advice services. I work part-time for one of our managed care organizations in this area. And for children who have, for instance, diarrhea and vomiting, it's really helpful to me if the mom has already tried things like doing fluid replacement on the child. I have a much better sense of where the child's at, and I can intervene much more effectively than if I'm the first person that she sees, and I have to send her home to try fluid replacement and then see her the next 24 hours. But it's still, you're right, when you're really, really concerned, to know that you can get past this on-call service and get to your pediatrician.
Marion, if you're moving into a new community, where should you start your search?
That's always a puzzler, isn't it? I usually advise people who are looking for their first pediatrician to try the childbirth educators in the community and get a couple of names from them, to call the La Leche League and get a couple of names from them. Certainly nurses in the community, if you have entree into that group. And pretty soon you start to get one or two names that pop up over and over again that other parents will recommend. That's always a very good recommendation. If you keep hearing those names come up, that is somebody that you should really go and talk to. And if you have special things that you think are important, if you think breastfeeding is a very important issue, you want to find a pediatrician that other people say is very supportive of breastfeeding. Now, everybody says they're supportive of breastfeeding, but there's being supportive and there's action. And so you really want to get with someone who does more than give kind of lip service to what you want, that really has something in the office to take care of problems. How do you handle screaming babies who aren't gaining weight? What is your first response to that? And it shouldn't always be, we'll give the child a bottle, because this is not promoting breastfeeding very well. So you have to dig a little bit to find out those answers. But in a new community, you try to find resources. Even if you call the local hospital and speak to the people in the pediatric unit, they'll usually give you the names of two or three people. At least it gets you started in that community.
Ask your friends who they go to and they say that they like them, ask them why they like them, because why they like a pediatrician might not be important to you. You know, might not be a reason that you would go there. But again, I think that is one of the best ways. One trap I think prospective parents should stay away from: do not ask friends. If you have a friend that's a pediatrician or a friend of a friend that's a pediatrician, this often is very awkward, is when you're going to a friend who is now going to be your provider. You know, what if you decide you like them socially, but you don't like them as your child's caretaker? You're just somewhat destroyed a social relationship. So if your neighbor down the street is a pediatrician, this is probably someone that, I'm not saying just totally negate this person, but probably should be not the first one on your list to go to.
It's funny, my husband is an attorney, and long ago he sort of said that we really should not ever use friends as professionals. Mm-hmm. He had a very unfortunate experience when he was growing up because his parents used a friend as a dentist and then found out, unfortunately, many years later that the dentist was really incompetent, and he said, problems with his teeth ever since. But we found that it's a very good rule for, just for the reasons you gave.
Pat, could you explain the role of a nurse practitioner?
Nurse practitioners, actually, especially in pediatrics, have been in practice 20, 30 years. Providing primary health care to children, initially they were designated to provide primary health care to children in underserved areas. So you found nurse practitioners in cities, inner cities with poor populations and rural populations. And I must say, this is still the main area that we work, although you're starting to see nurse practitioners more often in mainstream health care working with pediatricians. Nurse practitioners, as nurses, are very wellness-oriented. And I think it does put a nice spin on a group practice where you have a physician. Physicians have been trained, and I think there's a gentle kind of merging a little bit of medical and nursing education, that we're having some interdisciplinary type training so we can learn the best part of both education systems. But physicians have basically, the emphasis in their training is on disease states. And so if your child is very sick or has significant disease, then you certainly want a physician looking at that child and working either with the nurse practitioner or taking over care of that child. The nurse practitioner's emphasis is on wellness, as I said, preventive medicine, working with you to keep your child healthy and developing appropriately. As we were talking about breastfeeding, one area that I would look for if I was a new mom is if the physician, one, had a nurse practitioner in the practice, and two, was she a lactation consultant? And that's very, very helpful to have those type of resources within your practice. This is something that nursing owns kind of predominantly right now, doing lactation consulting, although I think there's some lay lactation consultants. But it's a nice way of knowing that you're going to get the best care. You're going to get someone working with you on wellness issues, developmental issues, as well as having someone that is truly an expert in disease states.
What do you think parents should expect of their pediatrician's office?
Well, I think the front office people in any kind of medical practice are the front line to the public, and if they are difficult to deal with, then you're never going to be very happy with that pediatrician, who may be a perfectly lovely person, but if you can't get access to it, what good is it? When you call, how long does the phone ring? Are you immediately put on hold before anyone says, you know, can I help you? I mean, it's one thing to say, this is Dr. Jones' office, can you hold? Or, this is Dr. Jones' office, hold. Because that is very disconcerting. And, of course, in my business of obstetrics, you don't do that to people. You might miss the whole birth. But it's very important with those frontline people, because they do represent what that office and what that practice feels about the families that they take care of.
What about assessing punctuality? We also have stories of sitting with a sick kid in an office, and you have an appointment, and it's 30 minutes later, and it's 40 minutes later, and so forth.
Right. And that's, some of that is unavoidable because of the nature of medical illness. I mean, there are a lot of children that flu goes through communities, and everyone wants to come in on the same day or the same 2 days. So part of that is unavoidable. But also, as medical care providers, we have to set up schedules that are realistic, because we know that there are going to be sick calls in those schedules. You know, if it gets to be really cumbersome, there are always other people who don't have long waiting times like that.
I always liked it when my children were little. If I called up and said, Erin's been up all night screaming with an ear infection, which she did often, and I need to be seen today, if they said, okay, we'll try to fit you in at 2 o'clock, but the doctor is really booked up today, so you might have a wait, I don't get angry then.
This is for both of you. Is there anything we haven't yet discussed that you feel parents should know?
Parents should really trust their feelings about a pediatrician when they go in for that interview or the first couple of times they go in. If they feel that they are not getting anywhere or they're being disregarded or their opinions about what's wrong with their child are being kind of sloughed off, there are lots and lots of different people out there, and you shouldn't be at all embarrassed about switching to someone who can meet your family's needs better.
The medical care profession and nursing has not done real well to our young people, in that we have been a little slack in providing pretty focused care for the adolescent. And the adolescent is a very different person than a young child, and is very different than an adult. And what I wanted as a parent as my children were growing, that someone that could really emphasize some of the health care issues that I was emphasizing at home. I needed a little backup there, you know, by my pediatrician, and work with my child so they hopefully made it through adolescence in a healthy state. And that was hard to find. That was very hard to find when my children were growing up. Actually, I never found it. But it's something I think that we need to, as consumers, need to demand of our healthcare professionals. And they are out there. I'm training nurse practitioners now to be experts in adolescent healthcare. It is a drive in medicine to expand the practice of pediatricians. And internal medicine and family practice is starting to look at their curriculums. But I think this is something for parents not to think is not important. It's a very important time of a child's life, and we need to be partners with our healthcare professionals in getting the kids through that time.
How can parents know if their pediatrician is good with adolescents?
You know, the only way you know if he's, you can find out if there is a board certification in adolescent healthcare. Mm-hmm. And an adolescent fellowship that pediatricians and internal medicine physicians can go through. So you can ask them about board certification in that age group. Now, how are you good with teenagers? That's another unique subjective area, and I think you need to rely on your children. If you bring your child or make an appointment and they have a routine physical, just ask your child, you know, so how'd you like Dr. So-and-so or nurse practitioner so-and-so. You can ask them what they talked about, but I'm not sure whether your child mm-hmm. will answer, and that's evading confidences right. maybe. But get a sense from your child how they're doing it. Or ask your neighbor who has as your child is 10, 11, going into adolescence, ask some neighbors or friends that have adolescents. You know, where do you bring your child for health care, and do they like Dr.
Well,
so-and-so?
Yeah, and you're right. We as nurse midwives get a lot of adolescents. Mm-hmm. And their moms bring them in.
Yes.
Sometimes they were our babies. And there is just a lack of people to talk to teenage girls yes. about human sexuality, about birth control, about AIDS, infectious diseases, sexually transmitted diseases. And the kids want to know and the parents want to know, and it's very touchy. People aren't real comfortable talking about those issues, so they bring them to us, and we'll talk about those issues with anybody, because that's what we do for a living. And the teenagers like it. They really want that information. And boy, once you break through that initial shyness, they have tons of questions that no one's fulfilling that need. And it's an acute need, I think. We have some of the highest teen pregnancy rates in the world here, and we are not doing a very good job.
And I want to put one more plug for another little passion of mine, and that's adolescent boys. You know, if we don't do a good job in adolescent general, we do a better job with girls. And Lisa, there are some providers like nurse midwives, nurse practitioners that will work with adolescent girls. The adolescent male is out there. You know, with sports injuries, maybe. You know, someone will address the sports injury. But the basic health care issues that he needs to learn in order to become a healthy adult are generally ignored. So as a mom of a son, I really feel impassioned about that, and one, training people to look at adolescent males and help them developmentally through this age group. And it's something that, again, I look for, and actually found a nurse practitioner for my son when he was an adolescent, who unfortunately was a friend, and that was a strain for her, but I knew that she was helping him deal with some of these issues, and that was important to me.
Well, we're glad to have had our own private consultations with two such knowledgeable professionals. Thank you both, Pat Pappa and Marion McCartney, for your guidance.
You're welcome.
We have a gift for caller number 5 on our listeners' poll, an autographed copy of Dr. T. Barry Brazelton's new book for children, Going to the Doctor.
To answer today's question, coming up next, please call us at 1-800-791-8573 and give us your response. What do you feel is most important in a pediatrician? To answer, call us at 1-800-791-8573. We'd like to send you Dr. Brazelton's book this week, and to use some of your comments on the air, so please leave your name and phone number if you would like us to call you back. This is Sandy Burt and Linda Perlis. We're glad you could share Parents' Perspective. Music for this program was composed and performed by Jonathan Burt.